Hey everybody, this is Mark Manson, and this is another commentary and analysis, this time on six healthy relationship habits that most people think are toxic. And if you haven't noticed, if you haven't dug through the archive deeply enough, this is a sequel of sorts to the six toxic habits that most people think are healthy. This post is another... It really is a sequel. It's kind of a play on the same ideas and the same shtick, I guess you could call it, where just taking really good, solid relationship advice and framing it in such a way that's kind of counterintuitive or backwards to most people. The first post did so well. It's one of the most successful posts on the site that decided to kind of give it another go and give it a shot with this one as well. This one did very well as well. Didn't do as well as the first, like most sequels, but it still did very well, and a lot of people enjoyed it. And I even got shout-outs from John Gottman on Twitter, which was very exciting for me. It was a big nerd moment, because he really is like the Michael Jordan of relationship research, and I've read a number of his books and read a lot of his research, and he's just like an all-around all-star. So it was very cool to hear from him and get his see that he appreciated and approved of the post. The idea for the sequel was actually, it wasn't mine. It was one of the when I was hiring a month before this, I was hiring for a research assistant. One of the people who applied, as part of the hiring process, I had people list some ideas for posts that they think would be successful on the site. And this was actually an idea of one of the people who was, I believe, made it to the final round. I thought it was a great idea. And so I said, yeah, I'll go with it. Just to give a little bit more background on, you know, some of the relationship stuff here. I mean, I'm not going to dive too much into the ideas of the post because a number of them are, you can find in other places and a lot of the research that I've cited on this relationship article and other relationship articles. But the, I guess the big one in this article that surprises people is that, is the one about attraction. And actually when I reference most of the people that I end up referencing to this article through email, like reader questions through email or whatever, it's for that attraction outside the relationship. And that is actually something I discovered. Well, first of all, it shows up in a lot of pretty much all of the research, but, this is the thing. When you dive into the research on human sexuality, it becomes clear very, very quickly that like biologically speaking, we are nowhere near like a lifelong monogamous species. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be getting married and we shouldn't be making commitments. It just means that the way our biology is kind of configured, we're a highly adaptable species, sexually speaking. And what seems to be most likely is that the vast majority of us, are emotionally monogamous. That is, we tend to look for one particular person to kind of align ourselves with and build a life with, while being sexually flexible to varying degrees. And that can mean a lot of things. So men tend to be more sexually flexible in terms of the quantity of sexual experiences that they seek out, and women tend to be more sexually flexible in terms of like the types of sexual experiences that they seek out. So for instance, it's far more common for, say a straight woman to experiment with, homosexuality or bisexuality, than a man. And it's far more common for a man to experiment with, just a higher number of sexual partners than a woman. Again, obviously these are all generalizations, but they do show up in the research. They do show up in research of other apes that people study. And so they're there's no reason to think that these things don't have some sort of like biological basis. But again, there's a lot of variance between men and women and within men and women behavior. We're talking at a population level here, which is important to remember. But anyway, all of that goes to say that it's important to remember that. So I get a lot of emails and talk to a lot of people who are kind of freaking out because they're like, oh, I'm married, I love my husband, but I have a huge crush on this guy at work and I don't know what to do. I feel like a horrible person. It's so wrong, but I can't stop thinking about them or, you know, whatever. And I felt that this was a very important one to just kind of lay out there. I also, in my 20s, I was very into the idea of polyamory. And I would say I dabbled with it a little bit with an ex-girlfriend, and did quite a bit of reading on it. And so this idea, it's rooted in kind of some of the evolutionary stuff, but, it's really what you see there written in the article comes from, a big influence of like the polyamory stuff that I've read about and, experienced, is that this sort of stuff is normal. It's only as threatening as you make it. And ultimately what matters is your behaviors and your, the commitments you make. So relationships are not some sort of like set in stone tyranny that like always has to dominate your thoughts and everything you ever think or do. That's just unrealistic. We're humans. We're complex. We have a variety of thoughts and feelings, and relationships need to be able to evolve over time and stretch and adapt themselves to each individual's changing needs and changing thoughts and feelings. And yeah, it's completely normal that sometimes you're like, wow, that person's really hot. I would totally love to get with them, but I made a commitment, so I'm not. That's totally fine and okay. And I think a lot of people, the big value of this post is a lot of people just needed to, I guess, to be reminded of that or be assured of that. Because that is one of those things that is important, but never gets said. Yeah, I mean, the thing about relationship research is there's really, and it's funny, I really considered going to grad school around this time, like 2013, you know, it's like my backup plan for a number of years was like, if this blog doesn't work out, I'm going to go to grad school because, just spending so much time with this research and reading about all this stuff and writing about it, I realized, you know, I have a passion for it, but I also started to realize that I felt like there's a lot of questions that academics didn't know to ask. And I felt like my experience dealing, kind of being on the front lines, dealing with so many people's problems or hearing so many people's problems, year after year, really kind of put me in a position to understand like what the right questions to be asking were, what the right experiments to be setting up would be. Because there are a lot of situations over the years where I would find research and I'm like, I would just get very frustrated. I would be like, wow, this is a great experiment, but they're asking the wrong question. Like there's so many better things that they could be looking for, but they don't know to look for it. But yeah, everything else in here is kind of your classic, either it's classic Gottman stuff, which I've referenced in a number of articles, or it's kind of classic, like boundary stuff, give each other space, give each other time apart, be willing to disagree with each other, let conflicts go unresolved. You know, true commitment exists in spite of all these things, not because of it. And I think it's important to remember that.